Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sean Bell, ultra runner, speaker, and running coach at First 42K. Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast.
Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Kennedy, and I'm here to help you become the very best version of yourself.
Beautiful. Nailed it. Sean, welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast, brother. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
For sure, man. So, what I wanted to start off with is, what was actually the decision, or why did you do your first marathon? I think it was around 2017. What helped you make that decision to even do your first marathon?
Yeah, so Melbourne Marathon 2017 was my first one, October 2017. I've always been curious in long distance running. Growing up, I was more a footballer, but I sort of dabbled with it, like school cross country and that sort of thing. And then it was end of 2016 when I did a 15K fun run after our footy season, and I loved that. 2017, I played footy again, wasn't loving it so much. And that was an interesting time for me because I was the captain. We went undefeated, didn't lose a game, won the premiership, still wasn't really loving my footy. So I thought, okay, well, if I'm not loving this, let's try something else. 3 weeks later was the marathon. So it was really just a curiosity thing, a passion for running, reflecting on that 15K fun run and saying, let's raise the bar, let's go higher and have a crack at this.
And how was that first experience? Come into it prepared or underdone or...
I would say a mix of both, like definitely not marathon specific training. Mm-hmm. From what I know now versus what I know then, it's pretty awesome to look back and think, well, I still did that. But yeah, I did three long runs. I did a 21, a 25 and a 32K long run. Outside of that, my training was footy training. So obviously there's speed work there, strength training, but yeah, definitely winging it a little bit and then just had fun. The atmosphere at Melbourne Marathon is unbelievable.
Unreal. And I guess what was the sensations and the feelings at the end of that run? Was it, I think you kind of see people go one of two ways, finish that marathon and kind of say, thank fuck I've ticked that off and never again, or they get the bug and want to keep going with it. So I'm assuming it's the latter of that one.
Definitely was the latter of that. Yeah, it was. Even throughout the whole run, of course, challenging moments. I think when you go into something a little bit prepared or partially prepared rather than properly prepared, you're going to face challenges. And around the 38K mark, I had a cramp in my left quad, and it's because I had no idea about nutrition.
Yep.
So there was a mother and her two children handing out Zupa Dupas on the side of the, near the tan, or sort of near the Shrine of Remembrance at the tan. And those Zupa Dupas saved me. The cramps went away and I was able to finish the marathon. And so I think it was the highs and lows throughout that whole marathon. But then when I crossed the finish line, I was like, this is it. I'm not playing footy again. This is, running's going to be my future and a huge part of it. So yeah, I think as you said, it can go both ways. It's really common for people to just bucket list item, tick it off. But for me, I fell in love with it.
As we go on, obviously that first marathon is not even going to compare to some of the feats that you've done so far and more importantly, what's coming up. But for those that are listening that are looking to try their first marathon, when you go back now and have a look at your preparation or some maybe lack of in some way for that marathon, how far out in advance do you recommend people starting to get on track with it and start following some form of a plan in the lead up to their first marathon in particular?
It really depends on where they're coming from already. So if someone has a 21 kilometer base, for example, they can already run a half marathon pretty comfortably, 12 to 14 weeks. So you're looking at 3 months or so. If you're someone who can run 10 kilometers comfortably, probably a 6 month build for a marathon. And if you've never run before, I think give yourself even a year, like really, depending on your background of strength, because I know you ran a marathon yourself with no training, went out and did that, which is incredible.
Wouldn't recommend it.
No, I definitely wouldn't recommend it. I think yeah, there's exceptions, and that's why I said it really does depend on the individual. There's so many factors, like what's your training history? Have you had injuries in the past? How old are you? All those things. So as a general rule, though, if you are running a half marathon comfortably, give yourself 12 to 14 weeks. So, you know, right now we're 13 weeks away from the Melbourne Marathon. If you're around that mark, it might be a great opportunity. That's if you can get an entry. I think Melbourne Marathon sold out. But
really?
if you can get one late, yeah, and same thing if you're at the 10K, work towards a half marathon.
Beautiful. And so I love speaking to people who just go all in with what they're passionate about and just give it absolutely everything that they can. And obviously that's something that I admire about you. So what led to the decision to, you know, doing your first marathon and then all of a sudden kind of just going all in with running and you know, dropping football and making that your priority?
Yeah, so I have to take you back a little bit. So I mentioned then October 2017 was the first marathon, but it was July of 2016. I actually lost a friend and a football teammate. I was playing footy for the Vermont Eagles. That was my whole upbringing. Like as much as I'm passionate about running now, when I was a kid, it was all footy. Mm-hmm. Had a footy in my hands all day, every day. And I think to lose someone who's close to you and a mate, like a teammate, it's tough. And it really did change my life and all of our teammates' lives. And from that moment, I think running then became a bigger part of my life as well, because when I would feel sad, running was instrumental in my grief. I would get out the door and change how I feel. So I'd go and do that. And so that being July of 2016, I mentioned then November 2016 was my first 15K fun run. I played footy again the following year, which was the year we went undefeated, but I wasn't loving it as much. And I do think that came from losing a teammate as well, because, you know, you're so close with your teammates, it's hard. And footy felt different that year. But there was many factors that went, I guess, the reason for that. And I just found myself wanting to run. And then the Melbourne Marathon was an opportunity. And when the going got tough out there, I reflected on him a lot. And I think we can do incredibly hard things when there's something greater than ourselves. And, you know, for me, in that very first marathon, it was thinking about him. And I guess I've thought about him and I'm sure we'll get into it, but even last year on my Cairns to Melbourne run, I lost my coach as well. So whilst there's been tragedy in my life, there's hard times in everyone's lives. Mm. And I think, you can use it in two ways. And, you know, for me, it's how can you honor these people and do something great with it? So, that's why I've been able to draw a lot of inspiration from others and do some big things with running.
When you're out on those big runs, and we'll get into those in a second, are you someone who likes to run with no music? Do you listen to Goggins? Are you kind of just sitting with your own thoughts? Like, what does that look like for you?
A mix of all of that. Yeah. I try not to use music too early on because I think, you want to use that as a bit of a tool if you can later in a race, especially if it's really big. And same with Goggins. I love Goggins, a massive Goggins fan. I've actually got a boat and a log tattooed on the inside of my ankles.
That's heavy.
To carry the boats and logs when I'm out there running. So, yeah, I'm a big Goggins fan. But I used him recently. I did a 200-mile run about a month ago. And
as you do.
Yeah, around 318K. So the last 7-8K to go, I was just – I would never quit. It didn't even cross my mind. But at the same time, it was so hard.
Every part of you is telling you to quit.
Yeah, I've been out there for, at that point, 52 hours. And my body's just like, stop. And it's screaming at me. And your mind's saying, why are you even out here? And all those things. So it was never going to quit. But I was definitely, you know, being a bit sooky in that moment, running slow, not loving it. And I just had to go, no, let's put Goggins in the ears. And listen to where he talks about the cookie jar, focus on all the things you've already achieved, what have you already overcome, those hard times in your life, and remind yourself who the fuck you are. And that's what it's about. So it's funny, I put Goggins in my ears and from that moment, was able to pick up the pace and finish strong. So he's definitely an inspiration. And I think, and this is something I talk about to a lot of people, I feel that a lot of my success with running has come through mentors that I've been lucky enough to meet, but also mentors that I haven't met, and Goggins is one of them. So I'm grateful that he's lit the path before me.
Incredible. You have kind of just brushed over two ridiculous runs in that last little bit there. 200-mile run and was the other one? Cairns and Melbourne, I think you mentioned. That's ridiculous. So let's touch on some of those. So I think, you know, going off what I know of your story so far, you did 50 marathons in 50 days, which is incredible as well. The 200-mile run, Cairns and Melbourne. Can you go into detail about some of these and just share a bit of those experiences with the audience and kind of also the sequence of how those came about after that first marathon?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll talk about the 50 marathons first because that was chronological order. So that first marathon, as I said, the moment I crossed the finish line, it was it. Running, I was all in. And so at that point, though, I was sort of still winging it in terms of loving it, but didn't have a coach, was just going out trying to do my own thing. I was at uni at the time. I was at ACU doing a Bachelor of Physical Activity and Health Science, and I live in Vermont in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, so I would run 21Ks to uni 3, even 4 days a week sometimes while my mate would carry my bag and clothes and laptop and food on the train. And I laugh at that now because I've learned that that is just not the right training approach. You know, doing 3 to 4 long runs a week is not it. So, I've definitely grown in that space. But I say that because that was me starting out with full of passion but didn't have the process. Didn't really know how to go about it. I reached out to Samantha Gash, who I know you've had on your podcast as well, and she's a huge inspiration, a good friend of mine. She'd run across India, run across South Africa.
Incredible.
Done several feats for charity, and I was so inspired. And I thought, I've got nothing to lose. Let's just hit her up on Instagram, and hopefully she replies.
Yep.
And I remember I asked her just if she could give me some advice. I thought I'd get a voice message back. I said, "Hey, Sam, I want to run 50 marathons in 50 days in honor of my teammate, and I've got a big goal to run around Australia in the future as well. I would love to, pick your brain, and if you can share anything with me, I'd be grateful." And turns out that she lived 20 minutes from me, so we ended up having a coffee that was like 2 hours. Within that meeting, she was like, "You know, I can see that you're doing it for the right reasons. You've got the right attitude. You can go places here. You just need the right process. Yeah. You just need someone to help you." And she said, "You know, I'm a runner and a speaker. I'm not a coach, but I know someone who is. I'll get in touch." 2 days later, I got a phone call from Jason DJ, who business partners, and they then changed my life. So from that point, that was September 2018, they said, "Well, what do you want to do first?" And I said, "I want to train. I want to do 50 marathons in 50 days. When do you think that that's a possibility with how much I'm running right now?" They said, "I think 16 weeks, give yourself a really good training block over the next 4 months. We could do it. How's it sound to do it at the start of 2019? I was like, "Perfect." So 2019, started that, and it was Jan 4 till Feb 22, 50 marathons in 50 days. And just the experience was epic. I think I ran all around Victoria, so Geelong, Torquay, Rosebud, around the Tan, and then plenty around the eastern suburbs around home. But it was just the community came out and ran with me every day. And it was special because within that, you know, I'm running a marathon every day, but there's someone who runs their first half marathon and someone who runs their first marathon. And it just showed me that running is so much more than running.
And brings people together, yeah?
Yeah.
That's awesome. And so throughout that 50 in 50 days, was that harder or easier, if that's even a way to put it, harder or easier than what you expected before going into that?
I'd say it was... And it probably sounds, I hope this doesn't come across as arrogant, it felt easier.
Yep.
But I think that's a testament to my coaches and how they prepared me. Yeah, I was unsure about it. The most I'd ever done leading in was 2 marathons in 2 days. And even with that, and it's funny because now I'm a coach and my athletes, I've got to be very strict at times when, you know, you write a training program, you exceed that. They run, I might say, do a 20K run and someone goes out and does a 35. Well, that's going to change everything.
Everything, yeah.
So I think back to, when I was starting with Jason, it was meant to be, I think it was a 27K or 30K run back-to-back days. And I just said, it's close enough to a marathon. I'll do 2 marathons in 2 days. The second marathon took me like 5 hours and I hated it. And my body was screaming at me. And he said, what are you doing? You're lucky that you didn't get injured.
Yeah.
Everything is extremely calculated with your training load. And, you know, we don't want to overdo it before we get there. It's about getting to the start line fresh. He said the first week or two will be pretty challenging when your body jumps up in the load. But ultimately, then you'll start to feel like, okay, this is just you know, I'm conditioned, yeah. I'm going to run another marathon. And he was exactly right. The first week was really tough. My times were a lot slower. My body was sore. But after a while, it was just like, okay, run a marathon, recover, and do it again.
That's epic. You mentioned before, I think you said something along the lines of like, you know, doing 3 to 4 longer runs a week is not ideal in prep for a marathon. I assume it maybe is case by case in terms of what people's lifestyle is like, again, what their training background is and how far out they are from the marathon. But what's a typical, I guess, running split look like in the lead up to a marathon in terms of variation with distances and speed work or longer runs and stuff?
It's a great question. Yeah, I think with anything, it doesn't matter whether you're training for a 5K PB, a marathon, even an ultra marathon, you need variety. So our body loves different training stimulus. If you just do the same run every single day, you're going to plateau, maybe even go backwards. You're not going to improve. So you need to have variety within your training, and that's strength training, that's running at different intensities. So you want to do one long run per week. Occasionally, depending on how advanced you are with your training, 2 long runs per week, and that's what a lot of the elites and pros do. But even with them, they split it up. So there's a midweek long run on a Wednesday and then a long run again on a Saturday.
Okay.
So for most people, especially the weekend warrior or the everyday person who wants to run a marathon, one long run per week is going to be great. 1 to 2 easy runs in there as well. So getting some recovery. I think ultimately you are following an acronym called EQSA, which is EQSA, endurance, quality, strength, and absorption. And if you can understand those training principles, then you can pull it all together. And it doesn't matter whether you're going for an ultra or a shorter distance, as I said. So endurance being your long run, quality being one speed session. So trying to get maybe a threshold run in, some intervals, fartlek, hill sprints, play around with it, have some fun. There's so much variety in running, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
Strength, obviously time in the gym, you know, not just strengthening your muscles, but your bones and your tendons. It's really important. And then absorption. So that could be in the form of an active recovery, like a really easy run. And when I say easy run, running at a pace where you could have a conversation the entire time. Super low heart rate, zone 1 or 2. It could be yin yoga. It could be Pilates. It could be, which is obviously also some strength as well. It could even be cross training in the form of swimming or a bike ride. But again, low heart rate. So there's so many things you can do. And that's why I think when people understand how to train, they fall in love with the process of running so much more, because every week is different. You know, I don't do Monday's hill sprints. Tuesday is an easy run. Now, this week, Monday might be hill sprints, but then next week it might be intervals. And then the week after it might be a progression run. So playing around with it makes it fun, as well as giving your body the chance to just get better and better and better. But one thing I do want to say is what you do want to focus on is like in the gym, a progressive overload.
Yeah.
So increasing just incrementally. And so little bit by little bit, and then you want to add in some deloads here or there as well, where you do drop your training by 30 to 40% in overall training load or training volume for the week. And that way it gives you a chance to freshen up and then you can build again.
When you first started your running journey, let's say after that first marathon, how much strength work were you doing? And as you've progressed and done more and more and gained more experience, what does your kind of strength work focus look like now, and I guess the importance of it?
Yeah, another great question. Look, at the start, not a lot. And that's why I think I knew that, yes, I had huge motivation of wanting to run these 50 marathons in 50 days and then eventually around Australia years later. But what I was missing was that process, as I said, and I could tell that because it was reflective of my body and where it was at. I wasn't getting injured, but I was sore. I had really sore joints, hip flexors in particular, hip joint, knee joint, like other people. And it was just so much running, and I was probably doing more running back then, 120, 130K weeks without the strength. So my body couldn't hold up. To what I know now, time in the gym. And again, like I was just mentioning, there's so many ways you can train. Some runners like to do an upper body day and then a lower body day, or even if they're, again, quite advanced with their training, maybe 2 lower body sessions per week, whereas some would prefer to do 2 total body sessions per week. So there's real variety. In my case right now, I like to do 2 lower body and core sessions per week. For me, with what I'm training for next year, which I'm sure we'll go into, I don't need to be overly fast, so I'm just doing the one speed session per week. But the key is to train specific. Mm. Because I'm training for that, just the one speed session per week, that's going to help me run more efficiently. It's also going to keep me loving my running because it's going to break it up. But if I was training for, say, a sub 3 hour marathon right now, I'd be doing more speed work,
right,
less easy runs, and less, like, probably just one lower body strength session per week, trying to be a bit fresher.
Yeah.
So I can go into these sessions nice and light and then run fast, as opposed to, no, I just need to get my legs, my core strong as hell, so the next year I can just handle so much time on the road.
What do some of those sessions look like in terms of, again, I'm sure this varies from person to person, but rep ranges, you know, the loads, mm-hmm, or and in particular, like the movements that you're really focusing on that you've found have impacted the ability to run efficiently, but also to minimize the risk of injury as well.
If you are, like, probably one really common mistake that people make when it comes to running and strength training for running is, they think very old school, is, I'm an endurance athlete or distance runner, I need to lift light and I need to do shitloads of reps. I'm going to do 20 reps. And that's not the way. Mm. When you're doing your long runs or your tempo runs, that's your opportunity for your endurance.
Yeah, sure.
So then when you're in the gym, you want to lift actually heavier weight at a lower rep range.
Mm.
So usually, you know, myself lifting and also programming our athletes, 6 to 8 reps is plenty. So you want to be lifting, you know, close to 80% of your one rep max. Obviously not through the entire session, or you're going to cook your central nervous system, but for some key lifts. So that might be a trap bar deadlift, for example. Yep. Might be some RDLs. So those key movements might be barbell hip thrusts. But then you want to get some resilience work in as well. So seated calf raises, huge. Yep. Your calves, your soleus muscle does so much in long distance running. So strengthening your soleus through seated calf raises. Also doing some tibia work. I think knees over toes guys obviously changed the game with fitness. And I think programming and people are doing more of that now, which is great. So that's something that I've incorporated in the last year.
Be back with sled pulls.
Yeah, with the amount of running that I'm doing, no shin splints or shin stress whatsoever. So those sorts of exercises. So I spoke about those key movements being your double leg exercises, but then of course single leg work as well. You know, we never have 2 feet on the ground when we're running. So we also want to replicate that in the gym. So Bulgarian split squats, lunges, single leg RDLs, there's so many options. But knowing that the stronger you get, you can always progress a movement as well. So where someone starts out and we might just get them to do static lunges, in time, like with me right now, I might be doing a step back lunge and then coming through with a knee drive. So it's understanding the athlete and where they're at on their journey, and then continuing to make it harder so they can get better and better.
Awesome, man. I love that. I think, you mentioned Ben Patrick before. His work's incredible. I've definitely incorporated a lot of his stuff in lately, which has been super effective. And I think, just as you said, like the actual running itself, variation is key, but also just focusing on specific movements,
mm-hmm,
not so much the exercise, but the actual movement you're trying to achieve. And that's going to go from case by case. But after the 50 marathons in 50 days, recently, I believe you did the Cairns to Melbourne run. Run us through that. And then I'd also obviously love to touch on how the idea of running around Australia came about, and get some details on how that's going to play out.
Yeah, for sure. So Cairns to Melbourne. Well, to talk about Cairns to Melbourne, I actually have to talk about the run around Australia first, because I set that goal to run around Australia in 2018. So when I when I reached out to Sam Gash on Instagram, that was part of my message. I said, I want to run 50 and 50 and I would love to run around Australia in 2021. At the time, it was going to be for the Compassionate Friends charity.
Yep.
So that's what I said. I said, look, I've got this big reason why I want to honor my teammate, but this is what I want to do. I understand it's going to take years to build up. Obviously, 2020, 2021, you know, the whole world changed with COVID, and that changed my run around Australia being from 2021. In Melbourne, I was living in Melbourne at the time. We didn't get out of, I can't remember the exact month, but we didn't get out of lockdown until late 2021.
Yeah.
So running around Australia then, even in 2022, wasn't a possibility.
Hard enough to run around the block at that point.
Exactly. So I was trying to think, what can I do? What would still be awesome training for the run around Australia? That's still my goal. But could we do something else that's still going to be, big? We're still going to make a difference, but it's going to be ultimately a rehearsal. And so it sounds stupid to say that, but the Cairns to Melbourne run 2022 was a rehearsal for running around Australia, which we then pushed back for 2024. That kicks off in March next year, and I can't wait for that. I'll chat more about that soon. But with the Cairns to Melbourne run, it was originally a backstop. We decided we're going to do it in 2022. Unbelievable experience, like the opportunity to do that for 60 days. And the reason we chose Cairns to Melbourne was we realized it was 3,600 Ks from Cairns to Melbourne. And so I thought, cool, I could run 60 Ks a day, 60 Ks a day for 60 days to raise 60 K. So the campaign, we called it 60 for 60 for 60. And that's sort of how it started out. But me being wired differently and probably a high achiever, during the run, I faced, again, some really tough times, some great times out there, of course. But day seven of the run, my coach passed away, who is my business partner as well. And that was heartbreaking. It changed everything. And I think one thing that he instilled in me is, if you believe you can do more, do it. Yes, we set the 60 K's a day goal, but there were days where I'm like, it's 60K. I'm like, nah, I feel strong. We're doing this for coach. So then we push into 70Ks, 80Ks, 85K days, and ultimately got back to just outside of Melbourne with about a week to go. And then I was like, now let's raise the bar and run 4,000Ks.
Run what?
4,000Ks instead of the 3,600.
Oh, shit.
We added another 400Ks.
Oh, fuck. Insane. That's ridiculous. So obviously, not only physically, but mentally, there's a lot of tough times there as well. And you mentioned even right from the start, having, your teammate pass away in 2016, how much of a driving factor that can be when those times get difficult. At a time like that, I think you said it was day seven, obviously it's an incredible driving factor, but at the same time, it's something that is also incredibly hard to deal with as well. How did you process that? Was the running helping it? Those days where you kind of thinking to yourself, I actually fucking don't even want to go out and do this? I mean, everyone kind of processes things differently, but how did you get through that?
The first few days I didn't want to run, so that was really hard. I had at the time two mates with me, so Max and Zach, and they were my whole crew. So that was really hard, because I think as well, like, their number one priority was my well-being, making sure that I'm okay mentally, physically. I said when it happened, I'm not having any days off. I know that, as hard as this is going to be, and it's going to be tough, and I'm going to need you guys to help me out a lot more, and I'm probably going to be calling family and checking in a lot more out in the road, but I will continue this because I know that he would have wanted me to. So that was a huge drive. We're going to do this. It's just, we're going to have to navigate how we do this.
Yeah.
And so the boys were incredible in their support. And that's something that, I look back now and obviously if we had more people, we had more resources, that's the perfect time to put a camera in my face to show me just grieving and struggling out there, because unfortunately I got to the end of the run and caught up with friends and family a week later. They're like, you did that so easy. That run must have been so easy for you. Like, everything we saw on social media, I'm like, oh shit, like, we just didn't show enough of that. And the reality was, it wasn't easy. It was incredibly hard. But Max and Zach were huge. The run wouldn't have happened without them, and Maxie was there for the whole 60 days, so just instrumental in the support. But the first week or so was so hard. I think I could barely eat as well.
Yeah.
Just a normal reaction. Your body's under stress. You're grieving. I could barely eat, and I'm trying to run 60 Ks a day. So I was losing weight at a rapid rate. And then eventually, started to feel better. We had another friend who was also coached by Jace come up, and I think he was grieving as well. So just us being together and him all of a sudden being in the support crew really helped me. And I think day by day, I started to feel better. So yeah, towards the end of the run, as I said, that's when those big Ks started to happen as well, which is also because, as I sort of mentioned earlier, your body gets more conditioned.
Yeah.
So early on, it was day seven, my body was hurting, and then mentally, emotionally, I was hurting as well. So it all sort of happened at once at a really hard time. But yeah, I think the support that people threw around me at that time, I was never going to quit.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations. That's huge. But not as big as what's coming up. So March next year, 2024, you're looking to run around Australia. How many Ks is that around Australia?
It'll be about 14,000 Ks, maybe even a touch over. I know that because there's a current record holder. His name's Dave Alley, and he's actually a friend and mentor of mine. He's been unbelievable. So as I mentioned, in 2018, I set the goal to run around Australia. So I called him, like I called Sam Gash, or found out about her. I reached out to Dave, and he's been huge in supporting me. But his run, he did 13,791 Ks in 175 days, 4 hours and 49 minutes. You can tell I've done my research. So that's what we're going to try and beat. So yeah, I'm going to have a crack at that. And with that, that's works out to be about 79 Ks average a day. So we're going to try and average just over 80 a day to make sure of it. And he didn't do Tasmania, but we're going to add in Tasmania as well, which is where it'll end up being around that 14,000 Ks. But yeah, it's huge. And again, proudly supporting Make-A-Wish with this run. The Cairns to Melbourne run, I didn't mention. At the end, we said how we wanted to raise 60K. We ended up raising $100,000, which is awesome.
Amazing.
It's given me huge confidence that, we can go bigger again, not just with the run, but with fundraising as well. So set out to achieve this record next year, the fastest run, 14,000 kilometers around Australia to represent our fundraising target, which is 1.4 million.
That's insane. That's amazing. Fuck, that's such a long run. Jesus Christ. So when you're mapping something out like that, how do you actually map that out in terms of where you're going to run when you're looking at going around the whole country?
It's mostly along the A1 National Highway. And so that's set up with Vic Roads, New South Wales Roads, and all the other states. You have to.
Get signed off.
It's something that people don't realize, and it's a big process. So I feel grateful that now Make-A-Wish are helping me with a lot of that stuff.
Okay.
But last run, it was Zach and I. So my mate and I, we were making phone calls to Vic Roads and New South Wales Roads, and then you have to get a police permit from every state as well. So it's a big process to do something like this. That's why when you do something like this, you're running in high vis because you're on the side of the highway. But yeah, it's mostly following the A1. We're going to start at the MCG, March 10, running in an anti-clockwise direction around Australia. So up the East Coast first.
Yep.
I think it'll only be around 2 weeks later we'll get to Sydney, and that's not running up the Hume, that's running on the A1. So the Princess Highway, sort of around Marimbula and those areas.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we'll get to Sydney, then Brisbane, only as high as Townsville this time. So we're not going to go up to Cairns. Once we hit Townsville, we go across on the A1, past Mount Isa, up to Katherine, up to Darwin, back down to Katherine, and then across to Broome, down to Perth, across the Kalgoorlie, across the Nullarbor, hit Adelaide to Geelong, and then the Spirit of Tassie is now in Geelong. So catch that, get on the ship, run up and back Tasmania, and then the last day, Geelong to the MCG. So, yeah, it'll work out to be about around that 175
Geelong
days.
Melbourne, that'll be in one day.
That'll be one day. That'll be the finish.
Shit. Yeah. That'll be, what's that over? Is that how many
Ks?
It's
about 80 Ks.
80 K, yeah, right.
Works out almost
works
perfect.
Works out pretty well.
If you were driving it, I think on the M1, which you can't run on, I think it's 70 K, but the back roads and that, it's about 80 Ks. It's worked out really well.
Unbelievable. I reckon a lot of people would be thinking at the moment, well, hopefully they are because I am, nutrition wise, in terms of I would assume there's physically almost no way you can consume the amount of calories that you're going to be expending on a daily basis. Not to mention, you know, if anyone who's done a long run, which highly unlikely, it's the amount that you're running. But often when you finish a long run, the last thing you feel like doing is eating, I think, a lot
spot
of the time.
On. Yeah.
So how do you approach your nutrition? Even, let's say, from Cairns to Melbourne, what were you doing with calories and stuff to make sure you're not just losing too much weight?
Yeah, well, the first 10 days of that Cairns to Melbourne run, I lost 4.5 kilos. I lost so much weight. And that was, yeah, many factors, the heat, the humidity, the big Ks, but definitely just not eating enough,
yeah,
in a big deficit. So we were trying to focus too hard on eating well, getting good nutrients in, and we didn't understand the calories.
Yeah.
So
yeah, good luck.
We got our sports dietitian on the phone, Chloe McLeod, and she's awesome. And she just said to me, like, you need to eat more. That is what you need to do. Tonight, you're going to get 2 large pizzas for dinner and a thick shake if you can. Like, go get one from Macca's or wherever. And then I started to maintain. And actually, from day 10 to 14, put on a kilo. So I was like, well, this is working. This is good.
Yeah.
So it was hard to eat all of that, a lot of junk food, but it was working and it was obviously what my body needed. It's funny, though. I think then a few days later, she said, look, because it also depended on during the day, like when you wake up, I didn't want to have a big breakfast before I was running.
Yeah.
Then you don't want to eat a lot when you're running. Like, I would still eat every 8 to 10 kilometers. We'd stop, have something quick and get going. Like, it might have been that my crew have made me a sandwich. I grabbed that, a few bites, take it with me, and off I go. But yeah, we were eating frequently, every hour at least, but still not a lot when we were out there during the day. And so you have this window of, let's say, maybe 3 hours before you sleep from when you finish your run.
Yeah.
2-3 hours where you just have to smash food.
Yeah.
That is your job. And it's crazy. Like, I was starting to struggle with eating, chewing, all of that as well, because you're just so tired. And so she wanted a lot in liquid form.
Yeah.
And so we made this like crazy milkshake every night that was 5 cinnamon donuts, 3 triple choc muffins, ice cream and milk, about a liter of milk blended in.
Jesus.
And I had to drink that before I went to bed. So it was about 2,500-3,000 calories just
calories in that one shake.
Yeah.
Wow. As a side note, this has nothing to do with what you're talking about, but for the listeners, I want to reiterate, and I've talked about this so many times before, but this is a prime example of how when it comes to body composition, cardio or hard training does not outweigh your nutritional intake and your nutritional habits. So, you know, Sean just mentioned that there was a period where he actually gained a kilo running an absurd amount of kilometers per day. So when you are trying to lose body fat, it really does come down to your energy in versus your energy out. Mm-hmm. Obviously, for someone that's not running 80K a day or whatever, then you ideally want to go for more nutrient dense whole foods and whatever. But I always love that example. Years ago, I did this little case study where I think I was training for like a half marathon. And when I say training, it was nowhere near enough training. But in that period, I purposely ate in a surplus just to show people that, you know, cardio doesn't necessarily equal fat loss, or mm-hmm. or just training hard doesn't mean you're gonna lose body fat. But that's crazy. The fact you're able to put on a kilo is impressive running that much.
Yeah, it's true. I think I'm going to have a similar approach next time with the run around Australia, and even later this year, I actually want to put on a bit of weight before I start.
Before you start.
So I'm sitting at around 76 kilos now. I want to get back to, I started the Cairns to Melbourne run at 80.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get back to around that. I think that is strong, but you're not, you know, you're still comfortable around that weight. You're feeling strong. You're feeling, you've got room for when you do lose weight, and you can do your very best to try and mitigate that. And we will, I think through what we learned last year, we're going to be better from the get-go next year.
Yeah.
But in saying that, you're still going to lose weight. It's inevitable. So I think we're just going to have to be on top of it with junk food early and try and find things that I'm going to be able to enjoy as well. It's a big part of it. So I'm a big pizza man. I was smashing donuts, which is crazy because, as I said, the first sort of week or so, we were focusing on making sure I was getting in my greens and all these things. And
it's too hard. It's crazy. There was a point in time when I was still playing basketball that I was consuming like 5,500 to 6,000 calories a day. I was working with this nutritionist at the time who wanted me to eat gluten and dairy free throughout this period. And it was like a fucking full-time job. Like if I hadn't eaten that first meal before, say 6:30, 7 a.m. in the morning, it's like impossible to get that amount of calories when you're trying to eat that well throughout the day. It's nuts. What do you do with your, in terms of hydration, whether it's trying to get in sodium and electrolytes and stuff as well throughout your run, like how often were you drinking and what were you actually drinking?
Yeah, so on the Cairns to Melbourne, it was more about chalky milk and strawberry milk.
Oh.
And then...
How's that go with your stomach?
Yeah, harder after about 30 days.
Yeah.
Fine from sort of day 10 to day 30. As I said, it was around day 10 when I'd lost the weight. She said, you need to have pizza, donuts, chalky milk. Just get it in. And so that was really hard. This first few days, we'd get to 8 kilometers and my crew were handing me a 300 mil chalky milk. I'm like, oh, this is the last thing I want. Yeah. 8 Ks later, another chalky milk. But it was working. As I said, I was keeping the weight on. So there are still some electrolytes within chocolate milk and obviously your macros as well. Yeah. So it did work. But then outside of that, just Gatorades, a lot of Gatorades.
Yep.
She sort of went away from just Hydrolyte, for example, because she still wanted me to get those carbs in.
Yeah. When you're thinking about the run next year, so I do want to touch on in a second some preparation or some tips in terms of people who are just wanting to, you know, maybe not run a marathon, but even just go from the couch to start doing 5, 10 Ks and some advice around that. But can you give us an idea? Obviously, we spoke about it before we hit record, but what your training looks like, I guess, now this far out in advance, like leading into that massive run next year.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting. If you want to have events into your training calendar, I guess, into your year, you want to have key races, you need to have build up to the race and you need to have recovery from the race. So right now, if you looked at my Strava, for example, you'd think he's barely running at all. Like I'm running, this week will probably be only 60K for the week when we're talking, what, 80Ks a day, 7 days, 560K for the week. So it's a big, big difference.
Yeah.
But it's been, Coach Jason DJ's philosophy, and now I've got a new coach, Joe Ward as well, who's incredible, and they've got a very similar approach. It's get to the start line strong, get to the start line fresh, and you will be able to get conditioned in those first few weeks. So right now, 1 month ago was the 200 mile run. So that was such an awesome experience. And I did that because I wanted to go to a place I've never been before. I wanted to go push my physical and mental limits further.
Did you get there?
I did get there. I was hallucinating, which is the first time.
Wow.
Because, you're out there for 3 nights or 53 hours, but the race started at 6 p.m.
Okay.
And yeah. I finished at 11:30 p.m. So started 6 p.m. on the Thursday and finished 11:30 p.m. on the Saturday. So, over that time, you start seeing some funny stuff. I saw, because there's a lot of bunny rabbits where we were. They were actually there.
You sure?
They were there. There were some bunny rabbits. I saw a bunny rabbit in the top of the tree, which it definitely wasn't there. And then towards the end of the race with about 2 hours to go, I saw a couch in the middle of the trails. In the distance, I'm like, well, obviously I want to lay on the couch. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But no, I pushed myself somewhere I haven't been before because this is very real. Like there'll be days next year where I think that I'm done 50, 60 Ks in and I will be checked out and I'm going to need to try and hit another 20, 30 kilometers. And so I want the ability to then be able to be like, remember that time when you're 100 miles in and you thought you were done and you ran another 100 miles and you finished it off.
Mm.
And the ability, another cookie jar moment,
cookie jar, yeah,
to reflect on it and be like, that's what you did. And if you could run 100 miles, another 160K, you can get out and do 20 or 30. Come on.
Yeah.
And off you go. So that's really why I did it. The 200 miler was an awesome experience. And to come away from that, no injuries whatsoever. Finished on Saturday night, went for a 20-minute easy run on the Tuesday morning. People are like, you're nuts. Like, what the hell? But I think it speaks to the programming of my coaches and understanding all the key principles that I spoke about earlier as well. So still in a little bit of a recovery period at the moment because only 2 weeks after that I did the Gold Coast Marathon and that was 2 weeks ago from now, but then starting to build up again. So between now and March, what you can expect from me, we're not doing any other races or events, but I want to get away. I want to do a trial run or two. So get away with my crew for 4 or 5 days and practice living in a motorhome together.
Yeah.
And this is what it looks like out on the road. Because I mentioned Max before, he's not the main man in 2024. He loved it. We're still super close.
Yeah.
But I've got another guy, Benny, who wants to do, because it's 6 months, this one.
Yeah.
So Benny's on for the ride, which is awesome. Having that one person there is a sort of I guess, project coordinator really helps because the rest is all volunteers. So friends and family might, I might have some friends do Melbourne to Sydney and then they've got to go back to work. So then someone comes in at Sydney and they go to Brisbane and then Brisbane to Townsville, whereas Benny can be there as the constant to sort of manage the project. So we'll go away with crew and have that experience with them. And that'll be what I do leading into March and then really just, yeah, continuing to trust my coach and back the training.
Incredible. One last thing on before we get on to the some tips for people just starting out. But let's say for the Melbourne to Cairns, what on average, like what pace are you running per kilometre?
Slow. Like 6:30 a kilometre. Some days maybe 6:15, 6:20.
But is the goal to hold that similar pace or are you just going by feel?
Going by feel.
Yeah.
The thing is, some days towards the end even, I think I'd have to look it up, but maybe like day 54, day 55, it was like 7 minutes, even 7:10 a kilometre. I'm like, oh my God, my body just, it can't kick at all. And it's funny, like you come away from something like that, I lost all pace because your body will obviously respond to the stimulus you're giving it, right? So even after I'd felt like I'd recovered after the run, like giving myself a good rest in terms of fatigue had gone away. I could start training twice a day again, not just once a day. These sorts of things. My pace was nowhere near it. And so, yeah, it came down to how I was running. But usually, yeah, anywhere from 6 to 7 minutes a K is sort of what I'm running when I'm out on the road.
Crazy. So for someone who is listening to this at the moment and they have no intention of running a marathon or building their Ks up that high, but just want to get to the point where they can go out and enjoy their run, are there a few things or indicators you like to – or factors, sorry, that you like to focus on when building it up? Is it running for time? Is it running at a certain heart rate? Mm-hmm. Is it pace? Like how do you help build someone up from – day one?
Definitely time-based. Focus on time. Don't focus on distance. And you want to focus on run walks as well.
Okay.
So it might be run for 30 seconds, walk for 90 seconds. And that can be, you know, as you get better, it becomes a fartlek session where it might be you run hard and then you jog, you know, months down the track. But if you start with a run walk, that will, you're still going to get the cardiovascular benefits, but you're giving your body a chance to get used to this new activity. So it might be, as I said, 30, 90, and then as you build up, it might be 60 seconds of running, 60 seconds of walking. And then it might be 90 seconds of running, 30 seconds of walking.
Yeah.
And you continue like that until you can run comfortably and you can run continuous for 5 kilometers, that sort of thing. So run walking plays a key role early. I still think strength training from the start. I'm a massive fan of strength. And you know, everyone lives in different locations. Some people, you know, they may not have access to a gym or they may not be able to afford a gym and a running program or whatever it may be. I think that's another reason that running's great, right? It doesn't cost a lot. You can do it with just your pair of shoes and off you go. But even if you can't get to a gym, just some body weight strength training as well. Like make that a priority. Mm-hmm. And then your body, as I said earlier, you're training your body in different ways. It's going to respond positively to that. So they're the main things to focus on if you're starting out. Like you're off the couch, just run walking, a bit of strength work, and definitely get people around you. So we all know that accountability is key.
Yeah.
When you write a goal down or you write something down, you say, I'm going to do this, you schedule it in, you're 42% more likely to achieve it. When you tell just one other person, that goes up to 78%. So that's something I share when I talk in schools and kids are like, well, I didn't know that. And there's a lot of power in that because I think, that accountability is huge. And on the day that, you know, you and I are going for a run, I might wake up off very little sleep and not want to go, but you get me out the door and then vice versa. So that's the biggest piece of advice to someone just starting out. And if someone is looking for more of a program, a little bit more support through our business, First 42K, we've got a 0 to 5K program for free as well.
Epic. First 42K, the free program that's epic. I'll have a link to that in the show notes below for anyone who's interested. But for those that potentially want to take it a little more seriously or build it up and get some advice from yourself and your business partners, where can they find your coaching and I guess what are some of the services you offer with that?
Yeah, so we have a 0 to 5K program, 5 to 10, 10 to 21, 21 to 42. So obviously the name, First 42K, is really around helping people run their first marathon. But then it's evolved like anything. I think people have seen me doing my ultra running stuff and they want me to coach them with ultra running as well. So we do have an ultra running arm or ultra coaching arm to our business as well. So tailored coaching. I think we have generic programs at a much more affordable price point for everyone, so that it's accessible to everyone and generic in nature, but it doesn't feel like you're just reading a PDF. You sign up to the Melbourne Marathon or some of these things, you get a PDF, and it's hard to understand sometimes, especially if you're not a runner. But we've got a web app so that it's, even though it's generic in nature, the 0 to 42, ultimately it feels like it's not generic, because you've got, there's videos of me taking you through strength training, and then you've got all different running sessions, your warm-ups, your stretching, your yoga. There's heaps to it. So that's one thing we offer, but then obviously tailored coaching as well, because some people live very busy lifestyles and they want it set up around their work and around their life, around their kids. So we offer that as well. There's a few different options, and you can go to first42k.com.au.
Brilliant. We'll have the link to that and all your socials and everything in the show notes below, so everyone can keep up with your journey and come along for the ride next year in March when you take off around Australia.
Mate,
appreciate you coming on today. Really enjoyed the chat and congrats on everything so far and all the best with all the future endeavours, and in particular the Run Around Australia. I'm looking forward to following along with the journey, mate, and hoping that you hit all those milestones and I guess most importantly, raise that money for those who need it most.
Thank you so much. And yeah, it'll be good to get you running with me. I think one thing that we will strive to do where we can. So I mentioned how there's all these road rules and things in place, and a lot of the time when on a major highway, you can't run with other people because they can't have 100 people running along the A1, but there will definitely be some times where the community can come out and run. So it'd be awesome to run with you and other people. You know, I think that's something I'm super inspired by, is when other people come together. You know, running changed my life. I've seen it change so many other people's life. I think if we can have that impact on just one person through getting them out the door to come for a run, then that's what it's all about.
Bloody oath, mate. I'll come down and run a few with you. It'd be good fun. Thanks for coming on, Sean. Appreciate it, mate. And for everyone who's tuned into the episode, I'm assuming you've really enjoyed this. And if you have, I'd love for you to share this with someone, or take a screenshot and share it on your social media. All the support is very much appreciated. If you're not subscribed to the show already, please do hit that subscribe button. And we look forward to chatting with you in the next episode.